Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Punaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Avidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Try to do two verses today and see how it goes. Mm-hmm. They're kind of connected, so. Challenging.
Yatha neka chakshuv prakasho ravirna. Yatha neka chakshuv prakasho ravirna. Kramena prakashi karoti prakasham. Kramena prakashi karoti prakashyam aneka dhiyo yastathaika prabodha aneka dhiyo yastathaika prabodha sanityo palabdhi swarupo hamatma sanityo palabdhi swarupo hamatma yatha aneka chakshuhu prakashaha ravihi na kramena prakashi karoti prakashyam anekaha diyaha yaha tatha eka prabodha saha nitya upalabdhi surupaha aham atma.
So I am that timeless consciousness. I am that self whose nature, whose swarupa is timeless consciousness, nitya upalabdhi. Then he gives an example. He says, yatha, just as the ravi is the sun, just as the sun, which is aneka chakshu prakashaha, which is the prakasha, the light for aneka chakshuhu, for many eyes, right? The sun is what supplies, it is the light, the luminary for many eyes. That light, that sun, the sun is the nominative, na kramena prakashi karoti prakashan. The sun does not illumine Nakramena means successively in order, one at a time. The sun does not successively, one at a time, illumine all of the different things that are being illumined. Like when the sun is shining, many, many things are being illumined. The grass, all of the trees, the animals, the rocks, the buildings, the people. All of the different things are being illumined, not one at a time. They're all being illumined at exactly the same time. See? So he says, just as the sun, which is the light for many eyes, your eyes, your eyes, your eyes, your eyes, my eyes, doesn't illumine all of the objects of knowledge that the eyes are able to see successively in order. First we'll illumine this, then we'll illumine this, then we'll illumine this. Now it illumines everything simultaneously. He says, similarly, tata, like that, similarly, anekaha diyaha, all of the buddhis, all of the different buddhis, all of the different minds, all of the various intellects, aneka means not one, so several, many, right? So eka is one. You put the negative in front of it, begins with a vowel. So aneka, like atma, anatma, icha, desire, anicca. So that, because it starts with a vowel, that an is negating it. So the instead of one, the many buddhis, the many, many intellects that are there. So just as I am that, in the same way, just as the sun, similarly, I am that self who, it's myself being ekabodha, one conscious being, one prabodha, so you say ekaprabodha, being Prabodha's consciousness, being one conscious being, Eka is one, just as I am one conscious being, one consciousness, so similarly, I, who am one consciousness, I illumine, taken from above, I illumine simultaneously, not one at a time, all of the buddhis, all of the minds. Right? So, here we have to say, we have to talk about this because how can there only be one self when each one of us has our own self? I am a self, you are a self, you are a self. My buddhi is illumined, is known, that is true. When we do the drik drisha, the seer seeing differentiation, I recognize that my buddhi, right, my thoughts, my moods and emotions, they are objectified, they are known. You notice the same thing. Your buddhi is also your mind, your intellect, all of your thoughts, your moods, emotions. They're also known. They're objectified. You enjoy a subject-object relationship with them, right? They are the object. They go on changing, changing. You remain like the sun as the changeless subject, the changeless luminary, because of whom all of them are known, right? Without consciousness, without the consciousness, they wouldn't be known. The is-knownness that they enjoy is simply my own swarupa, my own nature. So a thought goes by, and next thought goes, next thought goes, next thought goes. I remain constant, like the sun, as the luminary, illumining whatever activity happens to be going on in my mind. But there's a subject-object relationship. I never go when the thought goes. I'm there before, during the thought, before, during, and after the thought. I'm there before, during, and after the emotion. I'm there before, during, and after any perception that I have. I simply abide as the Asanga Atma. Asanga Atma means, you know, my being is never affected or touched in any way. It's like the sun doesn't become wet when there's a rainstorm. It isn't struck by lightning. It just simply remains as it is, as the luminary for everything that comes in its wake, comes in its sphere. Everything enjoys the sun's light, but the sun is not being touched or changed or modified, you know, or covered. It's important. The sun is not being covered by the clouds or by the storm. From its own standpoint, it's illumining them. Not covered by them. People on the earth, when there's a rainstorm, the sun, in the middle of the day, the sun is covered by the clouds. You know, but the sun itself is not covered, it's illumining the clouds. So if you're on the other side of the clouds, there's a problem. But as far as the sun's concerned, whether it's a sunny day or a cloudy day, nothing happens to me. So we have to always remember that we're on the, what side of the mind are we on? Are we the luminary like the sun? Or are we some little person standing on the other side of it? Like the ahankara. The ahankara is kind of the I notion. The I notion that identifies with the mind, right, is in a sense standing on the other side of the rainstorm. And so the little ahankara, this I notion, that has identified my own being with whatever I'm experiencing, instead of the aham, the I, landing on me, is like the sun illumining all of these events and all of these different emotions. I'm like the little person on the other side of the ahankara, the one who's identified with whatever emotions and feelings are going on. That little person is going to be saying, you know, it's raining, I'm just drowning in the suffering. I'm drowning in my suffering. I feel so bad. I feel so hurt. It's just as though there was a huge thunder and lightning storm, you know, with lots of rain. That little person is just being completely drenched, right? That's the plight of the ahankara. The ahankara, because of ajnana, because of self-ignorance, is standing on the other side as though of whatever is going on in the mind. And so when the rainstorm of the mind clears up, that's why Swamiji or Vagishananda is always talking about the weather. Yeah? I love it. I've taken so many things up for him. But that's one of them that I just absolutely love it. How's the weather today? How's the weather? Means what's going on in your mind. What's the weather like? You know? Which side of the weather are you on? Are you the little ahankara, you know, who's being, you know, trounced by the weather or wet by the weather, waiting for the sun to come out? Or are you the Atma, the self that's illumining the weather, you know? If the aham is identified with me, with the conscious being that I am, the self that's illumining the weather, then the weather is interesting. It's Ishwara, it is what it is. It's not me. I am not wet. I am not hurting at all. In fact, when the aham, the I, is identified with me, then I can actually, the buddhi, because it's the buddhi that has knowledge that's abiding as my own self, it can actually be useful to the weather, to the weathery, stormy mind. And it can say some kind things. Say, oh, it's okay, it's just weather. It'll pass. Just some weather. Don't worry. The weather always passes. Sun will come out. Just relax. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Don't get too wet. Yeah. Keep your asanga. Keep yourself. And then just let that weather be and give some kind words to it. Be helpful. But don't get on the other side. Right? So it's such a beautiful example. So here in this example, in the verse, he says, you know, the sun is the luminary. The one sun is the luminary of all of the eyes, right? Of all eyes, not just my eyes, not just my mind. We can take it to the mind too, not just my mind, all minds. It's a luminary of all minds, of all eyes, of all buddhis, you know. And then the being blessed by those things. You know, so what he says, let's go into the next verse a little bit. Let me just take us to the next verse. First, let me finish this one. So, and he says in the first line, just as the sun, which light is the light, the aneka chakshu prakashaha, just like the ravi, the sun, is the light for many eyes, and just how that sun, which is the light for many eyes, illumines everything, all the things that are seen simultaneously. Like that, says like that, the one conscious being, right, is the light for many anekaha diyaha, for many buddhis. It's the light for many buddhis and not just yours, because each individual buddhi has exactly the same relationship with me. And that relationship is one of subject-object. Subject-object means if something is objectified and is changing, I remain, right? Say one for you, one thought comes, is there, and it leaves. Nothing has happened to you at all, right? Otherwise, you would be kind of ripped. The vritti leaves and it rips a part out of you, right? Because you're attached to it somehow. And what happens when the next vritti comes? You're going to be totally in shreds. That's not what happens. What does happen to you as these vrittis, these thoughts are coming, emotions, one after another? What does happen? Nothing. Zero. What happens to the sun when there's a rain cloud? Nothing. Nothing happens. And so, now, if nothing happens, before the thought came, you were fine, you were what you were. The thought comes, you're fine, you are what you are. The thought goes, you're fine, you are what you are. Nothing happens. What that really means is that I have no sangha. There is no attachment to the thought. I am free of the thought. Right? I am free of the emotion. I am actually free of anything that enjoys that subject-object relationship. So when we did this seer scene, everything in fact is objectified. It changes, it comes, and it goes, and it enjoys my being, my existence, my consciousness, but it's not attached to me. You know, it may as mithya depend on me for its being, but it doesn't really touch me in any way. And so all of these experiences for me are just coming and going. including space, my awareness of space, my awareness of time, my awareness of thoughts and moods and feelings, my awareness of the body, my awareness of the world, all of these things that are in continual flux take place in my presence, which is not coming and going. It's true for me, and it's true for you, it's true for you, it's true for you, it's true for you. Even if it's just true for two of us, it is true, right? This Atma is not if, like this, if I illumined this thought and you illumine your thoughts, mind, body, etc., we both do, then I'm not my body, mind, sense organs because they're illumined and changing, and you're not yours because they're illumined and changing. And so what makes us two? What makes me other than or separate from you? We have to have a wall of separation somehow for me to be one being and you to be another. But when everything that could possibly separate me from you, including space, is objectified, then what is the separating agent? Because all duality itself has been objectified. You know, remember, the self is not a knower. Consciousness is not a knower. You can say, well, I know different things than you. No. Conscious being that illumines your buddhi and your mind knows different things. It's not the consciousness, the buddhi, the mind. And the mind knows different things. It has a different set of experiences. Your sense organs see and hear and taste and touch different things. Right? But those belong to the sense organs. You illumine the sense organs. You illumine the mind. You illumine your memories. You illumine your relationships. So how can you, the self that you are, be different from myself? What is separating us to make there be two of us? So this is exactly what this verse is about. He says, you know, like it. He says, okay, just as the sun, we all know the sun is responsible for illumining the eyes. The sun, which illumines all of the eyes, right, allows all of the eyes, it's the light. The sun is the light that allows, this is a better way to put it because it's more real to our situation. The sun is the light because of which, the very light for all of the eyes. Aneka Chakshuhu. It is the light that allows all of the eyes to see. It doesn't really have anything to do with the eyes, per se. It simply is the light because of which the eyes can see, right? And that sun illumines the world so that with the, in the presence of the light, the eyes are able to see. But the sun doesn't illumine the objects one by one. So first it's letting me see, my eyes see, and then it's letting your eyes see. It illumines this object or this object or this object one at a time. It illumines absolutely everything at the same time, right? Everything that comes into its fold is equally illumined at exactly the same time, not consecutively. So the example, he uses this example to show, you know, and he's going to continue it to another level in the next verse. All of these buddhis, your mind, your mind, your mind, are all of them illumined consecutively? You know? Like say there's one Atma, you think there's one Atma. That one Atma is illumining me, how can it illumine you? So, of course, there must be many Atmas because otherwise first it would illumine me, then it would illumine my mind, and then your mind. And it isn't like that. All of us are enjoying consciousness. Every buddhi is enjoying consciousness at exactly the same time. So how exactly does that work? You know, uses the sun analogy. Even though I am one, this is another thing. Well, yeah, but I am me and you are you. You know, so there must be many of us, you know, or it moves around really, really quickly or something. But I am me. This personal me is me. It's who I am. And so you can't be me. You know, because you're not me. You are not me. Because you're different than me. Well, from the standpoint of Ajnanam, that is true. These bodies are different from each other. That is a fact, right? Our sense organs are different. You have your own set. I have my own set. They're all different. My mind is different. My emotions are different. We all have the same emotions, but at different times, generated by different situations. The ahankar is different. When I'm saying I'm referring to me. When you're saying I, you're referring to you. I'm living in a different space than you are. You know, I was born at a different time. So yes, we are all very, very different. But are these things that we're identifying as me really me? Is this body, mind, sense organs complex, is it responsible for this very personal me experience that makes me experience as self-evident, not as an object? I'm not looking at this me experience. But it is kind of the bottom line me. You know, is this body, mind, sense organs responsible for me being me? For me being me, which is only me. Is body, mind, sense organs responsible? No, it's not. Why? Because the body, mind, sense organs and time and space are all objectified and they're continually changing and I remain. Yeah? It's like that anvayavyatireka we talked about. When this is, that is. Okay, relationship. Then you'd have to say, when this is not, that is not. Then there's a relationship. But my relationship with everything changes is when this is, that is, and when this is not, I still am. Right? Everything in the creation, including my mind, my sense organs, my moods, my imaginations, my relationships, are continually in flux. In the world, in my desires, continually changing, continually in flux. When this desire is, I am. When this desire is gone, I still am. When this emotion is, I am. When this emotion is gone, I still am. When this thought is, I am. When this thought is gone, I still am. It goes on and on and on in life. There's always that viveka, that discrimination. My being, this personal me, withstands my experiences. You can even say, this me right now at my age, in this time and place, used to be a little girl or a little boy. This person here used to be 1 year old. I was one, I had a 1 year old body. That's me, you know. Then I was 5, then I was 10, then I was 15, then I was 20. All the way through, I have what's called a pratyabhijna. All of those experiences back to my first memory, all of them further, all of those belonged to me, you know. And the one who is here now, I'm getting older and older and older and older to you. It's so I'm used to joke till I'm really old. You know? As I project forward, that will be only me, right? But the body totally changes every 7 years, and the memories and experiences of the little girl is much different than the memories and experiences of this adult, you know. But I am the same person, you know. I am the same me. Even yesterday is gone. That I was there yesterday. Yesterday is gone. All those experiences gone. But the one who was here yesterday is the one who's still here today. So this very personal me that is me and always has been me, you know, that one is not defined by or given the experience of me. The me experience is the very nature of me. You know, it's not like I'm pure consciousness. Isn't that wonderful? Don't you just really want to be pure consciousness? That can be such a turnoff. It's like saying, you know, in reality, you are pure, you're just like pure space. And you pervade everything and nothing changes you or touches you in any way. You are just like pure space. You are pure consciousness. And your mind will go, I want to be me. What about me? If I die or I get some sort of realization, moksha, and the discovery is that I am some pure consciousness that is just like changeless space, you know, that is not very appealing. And I'm not really interested at all. You have to tell me that this me that is me, that I know is me, that this me is what you mean by pure consciousness. Because those words are very dry. And I'm not dry, you know. If I am the one, if I say, if I'm the one going to Norway, yeah, I would like to go, you know. But if somebody else is going, then, you know, let them go. But I want to be myself. Either I go, let somebody else go, and I will stay here. So if I'm the one that dies and go to other lokas or other worlds or something, okay, that'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. It's like a bigger adventure, you know, because I will be going. But if you're talking about death as some soul that goes up to heaven or takes another body, and that soul is not me, then I'm not interested, because what about me? It's always this, what about me, you know? And so who are the Upanishads talking about? Are they talking about me as limitless, infinite, changeless, timeless consciousness? Are those just the words that are pointing to me? Or are they talking about some Brahman that is other than me? Brahman means infinite, that myself is infinite. So is that infinite Brahman, infinite self, like a universal self, that is not me? Because when does you say infinite and universal, I don't think of myself as infinite or universal or anything. I just think of myself as me. Infinite is a misnomer. Because, only because when we think of infinite, we think of infinite in terms of spatially infinite, or terms of that which goes on forever, ever, which is okay. We say timeless, nitya, instead of that which goes on forever, because that implies change. Or infinite, we think as infinite things, or spatially infinite. And I'm certainly don't, I know I'm not spatially infinite. I mean, infinite in terms of many, many, many things. You probably don't mean that, but I can think. I'm spatially infinite. Brahman is infinite. So we think it's huge. And so, well, I'm not huge. You know. So whatever that Brahman is, I'm not necessarily that interested, even though it sounds nice and everything. But I'm not that interested unless it is actually me. You know, the me that I know that I am attached to. And if I die, if that me travels, or if in moksha, I gain moksha and I recognize that it is me that is changeless and timeless. And that's different, because it's me, and that is meaningful. And so we have all kinds of notions, problematic notions in our use of words, like consciousness, like existence, like awareness, like infinite. Almost all the words have a certain abstraction to them that is worrisome to me. So we have to use words to crack through all of these abstractions, because the words are not pointing to something abstract. They're actually pointing to this me that you know so well as yourself. That's why when you gain self-knowledge, it is not as though you're having some grand experience of some infinite thing you'd never known before. It's that you recognize that this most personal me that is you, that has always been you, that couldn't be more intimate, couldn't be more me than it is this me that in fact is the me, the very personal me, that illumines the whole universe. So the whole universe, all beings, all buddhis, enjoy this personal me that is me. See, we think that each mind, each buddhi, each upadhi, body, mind, sense organs, is kind of adding the personal me onto onto the self. And we're attached to the personal me, not to the self. You see what I mean? But that isn't true. What they're talking about, and this is the big aha moment when it's seen, is that it is the personal me that is the very self of Ishvara. So this me is not the meanness of me that I'm attached to, is not something that's added to us by the body or the mind or the sense organs. I am the constant. My being, the meanness that makes me is the constant that illumines my mind and body and sense organs. In fact, that's why, you know, when you contemplate and you're kind of just absorbing into yourself, you're not absorbing into an abstraction. You're absorbing into me, into your own very personal being. And it's this personal being that is the personal being that is Ishvara, the personal being that is all beings. And so that is the truth of it, but we resist because of these abstractions. I don't want to be the self of all beings, I want to be me. As though the self of all beings is not me. So we have to keep using the language to recognize that it is this very me, in fact, that is the very self of all beings. And nothing can take this me, this self that is me, away. It is this me is the very self of Ishvara, the very self of your pets, you know, of all animals, of all insects, of all plants, of all beings, of the entire creation, and the whole creation being cyclical, coming into manifestation and going into unmanifest, manifest, unmanifest. The me never goes to sleep. You don't become unmanifest. When the creation goes into unmanifest condition, yourself is illumining that from the total standpoint that unmanifest condition is like nirvikalpa samadhi for Ishvara. Because no ajnanam. Ishvara is the creation just goes to unmanifest condition and then just abide as me. When you're absorbed in meditation, with your eyes are closed, your focus is just on your being. You're just abiding as me. When you see the beautiful murtis, like the Dakshinamurti, Jnaneshwari at the temple, all of them are sitting in contemplation, eyes gently closed, gentle smile. They just have withdrawn from their sense experiences. Their mind is just gently focused on their own self, me. Just being with yourself. And it is that self that all of us, when we're contemplating, we're all contemplating on the one me. That is the very self of Ishvara, that is the self of all beings. See, when I say that, then your mind can get a little, you know, because you think that maybe it's not me. But me, the self, remember this, yourself, it's not big or large, it's not big or small. Big, small, infinite in size, small in size, that all belongs to the universe. Time and space belongs to the universe. You are not big or small. Say if I ask you to close your eyes and have an imagination of the universe. So all of a sudden your being goes shoo, to the size of that imagination. It's because your being is non-dual. You don't become big or small or anything. It's just there's nothing but you. You know, so it has nothing, you have nothing to do with size. So your size is not going to go on changing. Ishvara has a bigger me than I do. No. Because your being has nothing to do with size. It has to do with non-duality. There's nothing else there. So, he adds in the second verse a little bit more to this. It's the same drishtanta, but we're taking just a little addition to it. Vivaswat prabhatam yatarupamaksham. Vivaswat prabhatam yatarupamaksham. Prakranati na bhatam evam vivaswan. Prakranati na bhatam evam vivaswan. Yada bhata abhasa yatyakshamekaha. Yada bhata abhasa yatyakshamekaha. Sanityo palabdi swarupo hamatma.
Sanityopalabdhi Surupo Hamatma.
Vivaswat Prabhatam Yata Rupam Aksham Pragranati Na Abhatam Evam Vivaswan. Yad Abhataha Abhasyati Aksham Ekaha Sanitya Upalabdhi Swarupo, Swarupaha Aham Atma. He says, just as the Aksham, Aksham at the end of the first sentence, just as the I, in the English you would say eyes, just as the I, the Aksha, the eyes, Pragranati, perceive. Just as the eyes perceive Vivaswat Prabhatam, that which is illumined by the sun. Right? My eyes, just as my eyes perceive that which is illumined by the sun, Na Abhatam, not that which is not illumined. Right? The sun must be shining for my eyes to perceive these objects. So any objects I perceive, those objects are illumined by the sun. They're not illumined. So he says, Evam, in the same manner, Vivaswan. Vivaswan is the deity of the sun, the deity of the eyes. It's like the principle, I'll explain it more, but just take for now, Vivaswan is that which, from the standpoint of Ishwara, the Hiranyagarbha, the conscious principle, the Sukshma Sharira, subtle body, that enlivens the sun, and enlivens all eyes. Because at a causal level, we have what's called Hiranyagarbha, the subtle body that informs the whole virat, the whole physical body. And so what is enlivening the sun is the same that on an individual, same deity, that on an individual level is enlivening the eyes. So Vivaswan is the deity that is responsible for the sun on the cosmic level of Virat. Virat is the whole Ishwara from the physical standpoint, right? And Vivaswan is the deity that blesses all of the eyes, is responsible for the Sukshma Sharira in all of the eyes. I'll talk about it in a minute. Then he says, in the same way, Vivaswan, Yada Abhataha, in the same way, Vivaswan, illumined by me, Vivaswan, illumined by me, Abhasyati, Vivaswan, illumined by me, who is Ekaha, who is one, causes the eyes, Abhasyati, is the one that gives the eyes, that blesses the eyes and allows them to see. Okay? So I am that Nitya Upalabdhi Surupa Ahamatma. So I am that consciousness, I am that timeless consciousness, really, which is the one self, illumined by whom Vivaswan illumines the eyes so that they can see. Okay. So let me talk about that. He's just adding this layer that's important. Without the subtle body, okay, without this subtle body, this what we call the Sukshma Sharira, this physical body does not, whether the eyes are there or not, without the subtle body, this body is not working. Right? So when the Sukshma Sharira, the subtle body, leaves the body, all of these organs of sight, the jnanendriyas, the organs, the sense organs, all of them become useless. They become instruments that have lost their consciousness. All of the organs of action, useless. They can no longer function. Physical body, mind, etc., can no longer function. Once the sukshma, the subtle body, leaves, it's a really an interesting and odd experience for those who have been present when a loved one or friend or somebody has passed away. When the sukshma sharira leaves, what is left is this kind of a carcass. It's an empty shell is left. it kind of just shrinks also. It's like that life force, you know, has gone. The Sukshma Sharira, subtle body, is made up of 19 components, you know, that enliven for the individual, that enliven the physical body. We can just list them. These are what travel and comprise the Sukshma Sharira, the subtle body. It is the Antakarna, the mind that is comprised of four functions. One is the buddhi, it's a type of thought in the Antakarna. One is the manas, the fluctuating thoughts that have that contain emotion. Then the memories, the citta, and then the ahankara, the I notion. So these make up the Antakarana. Antakarana means inner instrument. It's a word for the mind, for the whole mind complex with all of its four basic functions. You know, I can think, I can know, I can have clarity of thought. That's buddhi. The fluctuating, moving mind with, you know, the negative emotions especially is manas. Then I have memories. So this is the conscious mind. I have memories. And then I have the ahankara. So you can, just four large brackets that you can divide the types of thoughts that the ahankara, that the antakarana, the mind has. So that's four functions. So that counts as four for the Sukshma Sharira. Then I have the five sense organs. My ears, my eyes, my sense of smell, my sense of taste, my sense of touch. All five. Did I do all five? Yeah, I think I did. Yeah. The ears, the sense of touch, the sense of sight, the sense of taste, the sense of smell, five sense organs. Then I have five, so those are enlivened, right, by the sattva aspect. The mind and the sense organs are enlivened by the sattva aspect, subtle, of maya. And so the sattva reflects consciousness. So the Sukshma Sharira has all sattva, rajas, and tamas in it. So we have to look at how that is. So your mind and sense organs, that makes of the sattva, that which reflects consciousness, that is four aspects of the mind plus five. Of the five sense organs, that's nine. Then there's the rajas elements. Those are the organs of action. It's like your speech, your hands, your feet, your evacuation, your sexuality. These are the five sense objects of your karmendriyas that allow you to move your body and do specific things with it. Then there's the five, so that makes, let's see, that would be 10 and 4 is 19. And then there are the five, 10 and 4, let's see what I got, 14 plus 5. Last five are the pranas, again rajas. Okay. Those pranas are what enliven your body, like your digestive system, your circulatory system, the peristaltic movement, which allows you to eject the soul upward. Also, any type of regurgitation or vomiting or anything like that is that peristaltic movement. And then downward, what presses down, it's called apana, presses downward, that also is part of the evacuation. Also the in and outgoing breath, prana, or prana, prana. So these are what, you know, enliven. That's the prana that enlivens this body. Those are five functions. So altogether you can break it into 19 functions that travel from birth to birth to birth, enlivening whatever physical upadi that you have. The physical upadi body is actually made of the tamas, subtle tamas elements that make for this physical body. So it's with this subtle body and all of the laws of, in terms of the eyes, Vivaswan is the deity of the eyes, Varuna is the deity of taste, for example, because everyone has these capacities. So it is this subtle body that enlivens the eyes. Without the subtle body and the sattva reflecting consciousness, that the eyes can't see. Right? So the eyes, because of the subtle body, right, enjoy consciousness. Without the subtle body, those eyes can't enjoy consciousness. So the consciousness, the subtle body, becomes an intermediary between my sight, the physical, my being able to see an object in the physical eyes without that subtle body, enlivening the eyes, the consciousness is not functioning in the eyes because consciousness doesn't function. Consciousness is not a knower. Consciousness must enliven the subtle body, and then the enlivened subtle body, enlivened by consciousness, enlivens the physical body, which in this sense allows the eyes to hear and allows the eyes to see and allows the ears to hear and allows the karmendriyas to move. Without consciousness, that doesn't take place. This couch doesn't have a subtle body. Right? So it's not looking at you talking, it's not walking around. It has no subtle body. You know, the rug doesn't have a subtle body, the wall doesn't have a subtle body. You know, you could hammer the nails in it, whatever. And it obliges us. It's not fighting back, not complaining. You know, it's not looking in fear. What in the heck are you doing? You know, why are you sitting on me? No subtle body. It has, as does everything in the creation, whether it has a subtle body or not, everything has for its being the Satchitatma. Everything has for its being consciousness, but within the Maya, within the creation, some of the things within this creation have a subtle body and some don't. So it's only the things that have a subtle body that reflect back that consciousness. The others just are consciousness. It's actually very important because it gets confusing. If you think of yourself as a knower, that consciousness is a knower, then how can I be you? Because you know different things. And how, if I were a knower, then I should know everything. But I would be like an Ishwara. But even Ishwara's Atma, which is my Atma, is not a knower. It's just that from the standpoint of Ishwara, the whole infinite creation, because Sattva, which reflects consciousness, runs through the entire creation, and Ishwara is not identified with any given thing, the whole creation is known because of the Sattva. The entire creation is known. But Ishwara is, the self is not knowing it. The self just is me, pure conscious being. And that becomes abstract, right? So don't let it become abstract. This me, I right now, at this moment, am not doing anything. I am not knowing anything. I am whole and complete in the very self because of which everything is known. And everything that is known is mitya. It means it has no independent being apart from me at all. Just like the clay pot, the pot is mitya. It totally depends for its everything on the clay. It doesn't add anything. There is no additional substance to the clay pot. There's not the substance clay and the substance pot. There's only pot. There's only clay. In the pot, so then is mitya. And so here, for my experience, your me experience, and even if I said that, problem with language, because there's no your me experience or my me experience. That's as though the body, mind, sense organs is somehow contributing and giving me the me experience, my sense of self. It's like, I, that's the ahankara. I, this body, mind, sense, organs, I enjoy the self, and you enjoy. It's the same self you enjoy, but you're enjoying it. So it's very tricky. You're enjoying the one self, and you're enjoying the one self, and I'm enjoying the one self. No, that is not what it is. The one self is the enjoyment. Right? The one self, me, the me that makes me is what is illumining all minds. I, this personal me, I illumine all minds. I illumine the whole creation by my very nature. Not that I'm performing an act of illumining. I'm not performing an action. I am consciousness itself. My very being is self-evident. And it is my being, this very personal, self-evident me, that is the very being from which the whole creation comes. And the whole creation has no separate being apart from me, so this whole creation really is only me. Right? There is no really anything that's inert or matter, consciousness, and there's no such thing. We delineate our experience, categorize our experience in terms of the conscious beings and the inert things, you know. Because within this creation, right, we find those things that have a sukshma sharira and those don't, that don't. So I, as a conscious being, am similar to you, but I'm not really similar to the chair. The chair is inert. So I think I say some things enjoy consciousness and some things don't. But really, in truth, the substance is only consciousness. Some things within Maya have a subtle body and some things don't. So just think of when you have a dream, it's kind of obvious that dream is Maya, it's mitya, it's just one projection, right, that has you for its being. But within the dream, some things have consciousness, some things don't. And so from the standpoint of you as a little conscious dream character, you'll look around and you'll see, you know, there's conscious beings here, and then there's inert things, and there's material, matter, you know. So you make that distinction, but that distinction only exists within the dream or within the creation, not in terms of what is the essential being of the creation. The essential being of the creation is just conscious being. It's just myself, which becomes a knower, as though a knower only from the standpoint of the upadis, the sattva aspect, sattva, rajas, and tamas of maya, the sattva aspect of these different conditioning adjuncts. So my mind and my sense organs, you know, as though reflect or manifest consciousness. And the sense organs, through the sense of touch, pervades this entire body, right? And so then this body enjoys me too, right? Because I'm pervading it by the sense organs. If you were paraplegic, so one of my friends is, your consciousness would pervade down to that line, not further. If you close your eyes, you end right here. Right? Because sense of touch, because of the upadi, physical upadi, has been broken. Yeah. So here, what he's pointing out, because in the first verse we didn't point it out, here he's just bringing in the sukshma sharira, the subtle body, because the subtle body is necessary. What's actually happening in your perception, you know, the consciousness infuses the subtle body, which then infuses the eyes, which then see. So let's just read this verse again, then we'll close it. So he says, Vivasvat prabhatam yata rupamaksham prakranati na abhatam. He says, yata, just as the eyes, Vivasvat prabhatam, illumined by the sun, pragranati, just as they perceive form. It's the eyes, illumined by the sun, the forms, the eyes perceive the rupam, the forms, illumined by the sun. So just as the eyes perceive the forms, which are illumined by the sun, not the forms that are not illumined, they don't perceive, but then similarly, Vivaswan, illumined by me. Vivaswan is that deity, the sukshma sharira, either totally or individually. That subtle body, illumined by me, illumined by whom? Similarly, Vivaswan, illumined by whom? Abhasayati, causes the eyes, illumines the eyes so that they can see. Right? So, I am that Atma, which illumines the sukshma sharira, which illumines the eyes, which allows them to see. So it just brings in the task of the sukshma sharira. And it is that, so just a little addition here, it is that sukshma sharira that takes on these physical bodies like a dress. So now I've taken on this body as a dress, and I'm in this loka, in this realm, living out my prarabdha karma. When this body comes to, when the prarabdha karmas that caused me to take this birth come to an end, this body drops, and the subtle body, following the laws of the whole universe, which include the subtle realms as well as this realm, according to my karmas, I travel and maybe have experiences in other realms and eventually take another body here. And that process goes on and on and on, life after life after life, until I gain moksha. So what's important to understand here is it's really that your subtle body, which is the one that travels, which is the Atma is manifesting, right? The Atma is illumining, manifesting in the subtle body. The subtle body enlivens the physical body on whatever loka, whatever world you happen to be taking birth. Yeah. But you are really, what's closer to you is the subtle body, because the subtle body is what keeps going. That's why even from the standpoint of the subtle body, there's no experience of death at all. The subtle body doesn't die. The Atma never changes. So from the standpoint of your being, there's never the slightest shift at all in anything. The subtle body travels. But the subtle body is illumined by the same me, right? Which never changes at any time. So from the standpoint of me, there's not the slightest experience of any type of death, because I'm changeless and I'm not a knower. It's just me. The subtle body is going to have experiences. It's not going to have a death experience. It's just going to be traveling into different realms and then eventually being born back here, you know, which is how it goes, and which you've done from beginningless time. And so you have your memory. You don't have memory of, most people don't have memory of all of that. When you take this physical body, it's kind of like a clean slate. There's some scars and things there when you take a physical body, but more or less, memory-wise, it's a clean slate until you drop this body. And then your vision is much wider, they say, because you're just from the standpoint of the sukshma sharira. Then when you take another body, it closes. Memory usually closes again. Sometimes for children, it doesn't close right away. But, okay?
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.